My job is to encourage them to continue to fail at some things, right? And to learn. If the environment is tense and if the owner jumps in and solves the problem, you're not making progress.
Stahls, if you're ready to take custom apparel to the next level, Stahls is a leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business or just starting out, or an established brand that's scaling, use the code HUSTLER20. That gets you 20% off your next transfer order. Stahls has got the equipment, the transfers, and the support to help your shop grow and be a success.
Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? I think last time I checked, he's at like 1,400 followers, which, like, that's a pretty big deal, because if you need ink supplies or a daddy or just entertaining content, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with the top brands at competitive prices. You can mention the Printavo Pod and receive an extra 10% off your first order. Dave at Multicraft heard that we wanted to give away some supplies. So every episode, he gives away a case of PMI tape. So you can message him on Instagram. That's Multicraft underscore daddy. Leave him a nice comment. Tell him his videos are great. I think he's doing screen printing history videos recently. So we appreciate you, Dave, and the Multicraft team.
I got more giveaways. Easy Way gives away $250 of product credit every single month. Easyway.com/giveaway. Enter in your info and you are entered in. Make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with Easy Way systems, chemicals, and equipment. So that's easyway.com/giveaway. Just drop your info in and have a chance to win the $250.
Sweet. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you need to hit up GraphicSource. They're the industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service. There's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 40 years in the game. They really know and understand shop needs and have a proven track record of success. On your first order for a vector, SEP, or embroidery order, you can get 50% off by mentioning the Printavo podcast. We use them at Campus Inc., and they are a staple to our business. So thanks so much, Graphic Source. Let's get to the episode.
All right, Mr. Dan Frank.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back. Love that fabric hat in the background. You messaged us something that I thought was really interesting that I wanted to bring up on the episode and talk to you more about. But before we do that, where are my manners? How are you? Sorry.
No, I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks, Bruce.
How's the business been?
Pretty crazy. Yeah, definitely growing really, really fast. So just trying to hang on.
What do you think the growth, is it from last time we had you on, you talked about how you were very specific with sales outreach. I remember that because, you know, you spend the extra time that Kevin Baumgart and others talk about, which is like, you're very specific with the type of persona you're looking for, the person you reach out to. Each message is very customized and so on. And the follow-up, is that the result now? The growth is the result of it? Is it a seasonal thing? What is it?
I think so. I listened to your podcast with Sunfrog, with Josh, I think it was. And he's much like me. I mean, when he started speaking about, you know, he is the sales force and he's very specific. He's very pointed on who he can serve and, you know, who he feels he can add value. Same approach. Lots of marketing going out, lots of visibility, social media. But, you know, I really feel it's my job to make sure there's a solution for the customer and make sure their enterprise size. Now, he's got 50 customers, 40, 50, I've heard from the podcast. I have about 200. So a little bit different segment, but still, we don't have 1,000 customers, right? So
how do you mentally handle those just crazy cycles? Are you at the shop a ton more? Are you in a good state? Are you just like running around like crazy?
No, I've got a great leadership team. I mean, really, really good leadership team. And, you know, I try to focus most of my time on the strategic work and they do a great job of executing. So, you know, I haven't been near a press in a very long time, but that's great, right? I mean, it allows me to do the high value work that the company needs.
Has your role changed since last time we talked? As in like what you're responsible for or what you've passed off?
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to bring this up, but on the January 25th, I had a heart attack. And
whoa.
Yeah, I mean, not a fun process, obviously, but, you know, I'm doing fine. I've lost a bunch of weight and listened to doctors and all that. But I had this epiphany in the ambulance is that maybe I should delegate more and I should really empower my team. So I came back, gave them all 15% raises, changed titles, roles, really looked through all that. It was time for do that. I wouldn't say it was a crisis before, but I found myself, really having time now. And the
Holy
team
shit.
And the team's doing Wait, great.
Did you say January 15th?
25th.
Oh my gosh. That was right after Long Beach.
Yeah, I was having a heart attack while I was there. I wasn't feeling good at all. So,
wow. I'm glad you're okay.
Hey, thanks. But the point is, on a business side, it kind of propelled me to really develop the team, try to figure out roles, responsibilities, increase their pay and their responsibility. I just thought to myself, what's the company going to do if I'm not here? I think some people say, a heart attack can be a wake up call. It was really good as far as that goes. And health wise, I'm fine. So, but it was kind of a first of the year kind of reset for the company.
So when you said expand responsibilities, that's of the management team that reports to you. How did you determine what expanded responsibilities was? Was it just the things that you were doing that you thought they could do?
I consolidate digital and embroidery into one. I promoted them to VPs. So Rob is running embroidery and digital. And then I have a screen print man VP as well. And then I have an operations VP. And then I have somebody in logistics. His name is Brandon. He's great. And he runs all receiving, shipping, kitting, fulfillment. But I had Matt, who is running digital. And I put him into implementations and process improvement. And again, implementations are larger enterprise accounts where I basically just pass it off to him. Normally, myself and the operations manager would do that. And now he basically runs a Google Sheets as far as projects. We meet with him once a week. And those are the more strategic things that I would have to dig into. And I don't have to do that anymore. And he's doing a great job. Really good job.
So you looked at everything you were spread between, essentially, and were saying, hey, can you just fully take this on? 15% bump. Was that bump tied to any type of incentive? Or it was just like, look, I want to give you more responsibility, so I want to comp you more.
Yeah, just energize the group, right? Money's not everything, but it's sure important to a manager or a VP. But I also thought they were ready as well. So the restructure, give them the incentives, kind of give them a little bit more authority, and try not to get me in the middle as much as possible. So I try to work on the front end of the company and the strategic matters, but I don't go into the process anymore.
Was there certain things you had the company stop doing or stop offering or parting ways with folks or sort of the anti, the other side of the coin?
No, I've got a great team. That was a blessing for sure. So, it was really just reorganizing roles, focus. I'm not sure you ever heard of a term called signal. Kevin O'Leary talks about it a little bit with Steve Jobs and Musk, but really trying to prioritize our workflow, making sure we're taking the top three things, tackling those problems, being more aggressive, and even in personnel, not pushing things down the road, making sure that everybody's owning their responsibility and holding people accountable, really working through metrics, KPIs, really studying the numbers and really measuring the business. It's been, I just say we took a next step.
What's that signal thing you were saying? You said Kevin O'Leary and so what's the gist of it?
The gist is that Kevin O'Leary and basically was pointing out that Steve Jobs was all signal or about 80% signal. Musk is 100%. And what that means is they don't burn social time. They don't burn wasted time. They focus on the priorities. They get it done. It was pointed out that Musk and Jobs are pretty hard to work for because they don't want to burn any. There's not a lot of time for unproductive type of talk or labor.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was thinking too, because I remember hearing that statement they talked about, which was really interesting. Basically said most people are maybe, 30-40%, direct focus. I forget the exact word, but it's, direct focus work. And the rest is sort of distractionary kind of noise that they're dealing with day to day. And the top performers have gotten that up to 80%+. And pushed off the rest. So that's really cool. I wanted to ask your opinion on the Sandmar stuff. So that went around the press release maybe last week or a week before, but Sandmar acquired Bell and Canvas. The two founders, Bell and Canvas, started almost 30 years ago, 28 years ago, 1998, out of running a screen printing shop. Danny and Marco, obviously, you know, Bell and Canvas has been a huge supporter of the industry with events and all kinds of things. Big founder owned company, and they've grown to an incredible size. You know, if you've been to the facility and one of the tours through Pinhustlers or just being in LA, unbelievable amount of cut and sew and work and cutting and dyeing and all this stuff going on in Los Angeles. And then also in, Central America or something. I don't know, other parts of the world there too, for huge scale and operations there. You know, the press release was, I think, the usual communication of stuff, right? Like, you know, and maybe there's a lot that they don't know totally yet. And I think the one liner was, hey, Sanmar says Bella will remain independent and run independently, through existing distributors, which, you know, I think that was everyone's first thought. Are they pulling the plug on SNS and maybe regional distributors? What were your thoughts? When you see the title come across, what came to your mind?
Well, I like it. I know that the industry may not like it or feel a little uncomfortable, but it's the natural consolidation of most industries, right? So I think my assessment, because as you know, I came into this industry 7 years ago from supply chain, and I just thought, what a fragmented, you know, industry. I was going to say mess, but I mean, you know, from my perspective, it wasn't very efficient. I don't have inside knowledge from anything. So, but my assumption is Bella won't stay. I think it'll become exclusive Sanmar. I don't have any inside intel on that, but I think that, you know, the suppliers of garments are going to have to make a decision. Are they going to work with one of the two distributors? Or are they going to distribute goods like for themselves? Like AS Color is very successful and they've picked their strategy, right? But will the industry start becoming exclusive to distributors or making, you know, they can't play in both camps, but in my opinion, much longer. That's an opinion, but it's my opinion.
What happens if SNS loses Bell and Canvas? What is the, if that, then something else, right? Because something has to be fulfilled. I'm assuming that's a significant amount of volume under them, sales volume.
Acquire or exclusive partner with another company. I won't name because I don't know, but meaning I know Frank Myers pretty well, and he's a pretty strategic guy. And I think they're trying to figure out what their play is, what their value is. But I think they're going to become much more competitive with one another in an exclusive environment with suppliers.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Yeah, that was my similar thoughts too. And Steven texted me the release. I thought first, congrats to Danny and Marco, you know, being able to, you know, they've got two businesses. If people don't know, they also have Aloe Yoga, which is a you know, large athleisure brand, big competitor to Lululemon and Vori and all those types of companies. There was a leak in the Wall Street Journal that they were shopping a portion of that business around with a valuation of closer to $10 billion. Now, who really knows the truth? And that could have been rumors, but you know, that's a huge, huge company compared to Bella. It does make you wonder, is from their perspective, was it a distraction for them later on, right? You've got this behemoth of a retail brand, consumer brand, international presence, all these influencers tied to it. I'm assuming crazy amount of growth. They have a beautiful office down in Beverly Hills. I mean, they're you know, they're doing things correctly in terms of that side. You know, why not just put all your chips there, or as in spend most time and focus there? But yeah, you're right. I think that does leave a void for SNS. And from what I understand, that was the void American Apparel left early on, which boosted Bell and Canvas's growth years and years ago, through SNS originally. So, yeah, you know, paves the way for a future brand to I think to build up and continue to grow. And you saw that at Long Beach too. You probably saw all these brands and huge booths and everything. A lot of folks that I hadn't even heard of just yet. And a lot of these up and coming companies. You mentioned AS Color and, you know, Stanley and Stella and like all these other ones that are starting to grow and fill the cracks.
I think the value of SNS and Sanmar is the supply chain, because that's where I came from. And what I mean by that is they have all these warehouses across the US. They have all, now they're putting in such great technology. I mean, if you've been into some of these facilities now, they're almost automated, right? Fully automated, especially with SNS. And, you know, it's, look at the POD growth with Sunfrog. Look at, you know, what is the value of that inventory being strategically located to the demand? The biggest problem in the industry is spoilage. And everybody's trying to get it faster, reduce spoilage, get to the end consumer faster. And the industry is just growing up, if you ask me. And again, I'm not trying to be critical. I think it's great. And you know, I've been in it 7 years. And when I first got in, I thought to myself, boy, there's a lot of room for improvement. And that with technology and these larger companies looking at these things, I think at the end of the day, it's the customer demand that's driving change.
The biggest comment I think that folks were making was, does this affect pricing? As in, if you have less competition, do you see prices start to tick up more on those goods? What were your thoughts? Or was that a consideration?
You probably know we do a lot of bulk ordering. We're probably up to $1 million a month in ordering. We're growing at about 100% this year. And it's a lot of it is procurement, also kitting and fulfillment. And so I'm not as concerned. We're not nickel and dime in the vendors. We're really working with them and partnering with them. So as far as I'm concerned, as long as the market price, and we also don't mark up the garments, we put a procurement fee, right? So whatever the garment price is, and we involve our customers in that negotiation. So for me, is it concerning? Not really. Will it happen? I don't know. I really don't know. But I think for a promo company or for a decorator that's doing retail, I can see the concern.
Yeah, it is interesting. But to your point, isn't that the beauty of the free markets too, right? Where someone else comes in, they've got an incredible product, could be priced more even. Like, you know, some of those other ones are more expensive and or could be priced under and deliver more value for what a shop wants.
And I also think the reason AS Color is growing, which they're doing a great job, like I said, and they're staying distributor, you know, they're not working with distributors, is that the consumer base is looking for higher quality as well. We're seeing that over the years. I mean, especially now, medium to high grade t-shirts or hoodies or so on, fleece, so on and so forth. So I think the market is also changing. They're looking for quality and speed.
So yeah, that's what your customers are looking for?
More and more. And we consult them that way as well. We really try to help them get a good value, meaning that a quality product.
Very interesting. Yeah, it'll be cool to see how it plays out over the next year or so. For folks listening, drop your thought into you know, the comment wherever you're listening to this. It will be cool to see. I think the other thing is this won't be the last. I think there will be many, many more. I think it's just getting started, in fact.
I wanted to bring up a subject with you that I saw on the Sunfrog, and I see the race toward POD. I was just talking to a partner of mine in Charlotte, and we see two things going on. We see digital is going to take over screen print. I know there's some of the discussion there, and I'm not fully on board with that. I think screen print is a very viable product as well. I think it's more about having a diversity of products. So that's what we're working on is we want to be able to do all digital, all screen print, all embroidery, sewing, things like that. I think, you know, the other thing is POD is going to take over the market. I think POD has this, it has obviously a high growth curve coming, but bulk and fulfillment and kitting and stuff like that, we focus on that because we see an opening. There's not a lot of large contract decorators that are, you know, the size of us or, you know, also we're working with UTs and US Colorworks in Charlotte and Cleveland to work together on enterprise accounts. And that's becoming very successful. So we're kind of feeling that the industry is shifting sometimes a little bit too far to call it the left, right? The POD digital. And the reality is, what about bulk? What about the value of screen print for large orders? And, you know, what about that technique? I think that is potentially being seen as a dying industry. I don't agree with that. And I'm not upset about it because it gives us room to do what we do. Does that make sense?
Where are you investing your equipment dollars in, you know, this year and next year?
I do agree that DTF is a really unique product, and we're buying an M&R auto press. I forget what they call that. I think I just forgot the name, but also auto cutters. We're down up to 3 DTF machines. We're using 9 color machines now. No more CMYK. We're working with hand feel. So, I was really interested to listen to the Sunfrog episode because I thought, you know, he is correct in a sense that DTF is a great product. It really is. I think DTG still has its place though for retail, 100% garment, and they're also going to poly. But then I think screen print is not going to shrink to the amount that maybe people are scared about. I think screen printers are a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And Dan's referencing the Josh Kent episode where we had Josh from Sunfrog on, and he's got an incredible, he actually did a video shop tour of his business and was kind of showing you his before and after and all the equipment and different things he's investing in. And he's pumping out almost 30,000 units a day, but has not been an easy journey. I'm sure you heard from his ups and downs to get there.
By the way, great business guy. Really loved him. I mean, disagreeing on some points is not the big issue. The listening to his story is great. And I think he did an incredible job getting through a very tough time.
Yeah. Is that, do you spend much time thinking about that kind of stuff? You know, a higher level execution of where you want the business to go? Or is it more kind of week to week and just more sales driven focus and helping your team?
The biggest thing we're investing in is the group that I mentioned in Cleveland and in Charlotte, us working as a team. We're working on technology and we're going to come out with some news in regards to a name and things like that. But I think the big need is what we see is bulk production, high volume bulk production, fulfillment, kitting, and one system for nationwide companies. We are calling enterprise accounts. So we're working hard on that. And that's probably where most of our growth is coming from.
What do you mean by one system?
I mean, one operating system for all 3 companies.
Oh, gotcha. Give folks a sense of your size too. Because, if you didn't listen to Dan Frank's episode before, in terms of people and whatever you can say about size of the business.
Yeah. We're probably at 110 staff right now. One thing about staff, I hear a lot of people talk about people, but when I bought the company, it was 2.7 million. Now we're going to do 23 million, I think, something like that. And we had 35 to 36 average employees. Now we have 110, so we're much more efficient. So headcount 110, 23 million. We're in about 60,000 square foot of facilities. We're expanding a little bit more in the park that we're at. The best part is for the first time this year, we're creating cash. I mean, lots of investment, right? And it's not that we're losing money, but we sure weren't making cash because we were investing. So this year is really nice to have that pressure off.
Do you think you're able to curb reinvesting more to generate additional cash now? Or what changed then, you think, this year? Because that's always a hard, Mike McCollowitz at Profit First talks about this is, owners just don't have self-control generally to, not that you don't, it sounds like you do, but don't have general control to be able to dial that knob back. What changed this year for you guys?
I think just scale, we got to a certain scale where we only invest about $400,000 to $500,000 a year in equipment. And we've been investing $400,000 to $500,000 for 5 years. So now $400,000 to $500,000 is a lot less at our size now. Right. So I think curbing what you need versus what you want. I see a lot of people also running to technologies too early. I think, with Cornitz on round 2, and I think they're doing a good job, but I saw a lot of people run to Cornitz and DTG, 5 years ago? And it wasn't a good investment at that time. I would argue that it probably is now, but you got to let the technologies, kind of everybody gets wild with the new thing. Well, I'm very, very reluctant to do that.
What do you mean by you get to a certain scale that you can now start to cash flow? Because I'm thinking of the person that has 10, 15 people or so. And I think, okay, maybe at, let's say 30 people, you could start to have some couple good managers and sub out a good amount of your work during the day. But, them thinking about, oh shit, I got to get to 110, to be able to have some sort of scale that's not my path.
I think it's fair to decide what you want to do. I mean, I've had an appetite to scale and grow, and maybe another company says I want to run efficiently at 7 million. I don't think that, and then they're going to look at their purchasing and look at their strategy a little bit different. I really invested in a leadership team. I really invested in facilities and equipment and new technologies and our portal, which is our technology. I mean, you know, I didn't spend millions, but I spent $8 million or more, a little bit more than that over the last 4 years. So the question is, what is your vision? I mean, building a profitable company doesn't have to be 23 million. It could be seven, but, you know, trying to create a plan that is achievable and cash flow positive at that time, I think is the key. I don't think you can get from 2 to 7 without investing though. That makes sense. I just don't think it's possible.
What were the bumpy revenue we'll call it breakpoints almost from 2 million, you think, to 23 million? Like, I remember around, call it 4 to 5 million was tough because of so much investment needed in management and, you know, not just sort of internal promotion of people that may have been a smaller, you know, 20% bump or something, but like a real good manager that costs could be 2x. That was tough. And that meant that we had to really keep pushing to be able to get behind that. We had Dominic at Superior Inc. around 5 million now, and that's where he's at. And he feels the pressure because he's got the management, he's got the team, he's got the scale to now get to the next step. But that was a bumpy one. What, do you remember what they were for you guys?
Probably same. I'm trying to remember the years. 2024, we did 7.6, I think. Last year, we did 12.9. I would tell you, in the 7.6, we weren't making money at all. But we had a vision of going above 10 million, so we invested. Does that make sense? I mean, I think if somebody says, hey, 7.6 is our sweet spot, then they should start trimming things and doing it. But if you're going to say, hey, we're going to go above 10 million, which was our goal, it took some investment in people, processes, equipment. So I don't know if there's a number, but it sounds like Superior Inc., if that's who you said, it probably was the same point. Once we got above 10 million, we started kind of gaining some traction on profitability. And now this year, it'd be good.
Was there a few sweet spots that you passed through? I mean, your goal was to get bigger and continue to grow, but you said, wow, this is a nice spot here. We could probably cruise if we wanted to.
Yeah, I always look at the employees and the customers' demand, and it just depends on appetite. I mean, for me, I really wanted to build an enterprise company that could service larger companies. So larger companies need higher production. They need, you know, dual shifts. Our facilities don't even really close anymore. So, you know, how are you going to develop the management structure for that? How are you going to execute on that? So I think it really has to do with your vision, if I answer your question.
Were there a couple of roles you wish you would have hired sooner?
No, I probably did it too early, if anything, because I was just thinking, hey, I got to build a really good executive team. And, you know, they're all six-figure people now. So, you know, it's not cheap. But the question is when and how do you develop that team? I think it's step by step. I mean, I can continue to work with them. Hey, if next year we get to this spot, this is where your compensation is going to go. And just made sure they were part of the process.
Okay. So then on the other side, how do you hire early to get ready for where you're going? Like, is it, you know, hey, we are on this revenue track. If that happens, I'd like, you know, this person to take over, or like, as in, cause there's, so, let's call it five different types of maybe leadership roles, maybe more. How do you think about bringing on those roles early? And like, do you have an example of that? Maybe around the 7 or 5-ish to 7 million part where you said, okay, we're heading here. We're going to pass this up. Who's the type of person I want to bring on now?
Yeah. So you asked about hard choices of employees or management. I did around 7 to 10 million. I had to release two managers and bring in higher talent. We even relocated from Fresno with the Alpha Broder closure. So the senior manager there came up here, a screen print guy, great guy. But that was the hard time where, you know, they weren't going to perform to the vision we had. And I was challenging them. I was working with them, but I did have to release two people. So, you know, those are not easy choices, but, you know, and I think communicating both of them actually resigned. Actually, I just remembered it. So they had an idea that, hey, this isn't going to work, right? Dan's appetite for growth isn't where I'm at. One senior manager said, hey, you know, I need more family time. I'm kind of looking for out home work. And him and I just talked on Sunday. We're friends, and in the same pretty much with the other one as well. So, you know, I think it's our job, or at least it's my job, to make sure that they know what they're shooting at and for them to make choices, right? I mean, it may not be for them. Because a larger company, you're going to have to exercise higher commitment and higher skills.
How long does it take for you to figure that out, that maybe you need to up-level a person in their role? I found that to be hard, you know, just, hey, let me give you another shot. Let's give another shot, you know, and next thing you know, it could be a year down the road, partially doing their job, partially not. Or maybe that's the sign.
Maybe you should have one of my employees on the call, but I don't think I'm real patient. And I think they get anxious when I'm impatient. I'm not a loud guy. I'm going to hold them accountable and show, hey, this is where we got to go. And I meet with every single manager every single month, and we sit down and go through their goals, what they're doing, what questions they have, what concerns do I have, and just try to keep the communication really open and very honest.
I'm just going to theoretically play this. So if a manager meeting, you're not getting the output that you want, whether it's a numeric thing, whether it's a reporting thing, or, you know, you're hearing just a lot of issues on that side of the business. You communicate that. Is that like the next meeting in 30 days, you're waiting to hear back an update or something is improving or not? And then if that, it's like a 30-day, you know, performance improvement plan, or how do you see that so it doesn't end up being like most of us where, you know, someone's around for way too long.
I also get a Friday report from each of the managers as well, just to like five. I would just want five bullet points. If I think things are going off track or whatever, then I'll go to their office and sit down with them as well. So to your point, if things aren't progressing positively, it's not. I don't wait for a monthly meeting. And I'm pretty vocal in the dailies as well. So, you know, we have production meetings every morning, and I don't run the meeting, but I'll come in if I've got some concerns and I'll voice them to the team. With NVIDIA, the CEO there, he really is, I've learned from him and I've really studied how he operates. I don't know if you listen to him, Jensen. And he talks to the team about all problems very openly. He doesn't, you know, he makes sure that the concerns are right in front of them, that they're very aware of what we need to do to get there. And what are the areas where we're failing? What are the, and also KPIs and measurement, make sure that we're measuring. I mean, right now in ScreenPrint, we have some quality issues and we've kind of made an action plan around that. I think the production's doing great, but our errors are over budget. So we're really, really dialing into that. If that ScreenPrint manager wasn't receptive to that and he wasn't, you know, pushing the envelope with us, then I would have a concern.
Okay. So that issue is something like that. Are you jumping in with a solution? Are you asking the manager, hey, what are you going to do to be like, what's the plan here? And then hold them accountable to that. What is your game plan? Because that's a great example of how to approach it, especially with most of us would just jump in, right? And start trying to do all the work and being there and looking at everything. But how do you think about it?
Yeah, it's not my job to jump in. I think I'm stealing his authority if I do that. Right. So I don't think it's my job to jump in and override him, because now all of a sudden, you know, people are looking to me. But my job is to talk about what his plan is. But I don't think his plan, this is kind of active for us right now, so it's a good subject, and not that his plan is poor, but I think he needs more support. So on their weekly meetings, their captain's meetings, their supervisors, I'm going to be going in with Haley, the operations manager, and really identifying some problems that have happened and really review them. And really say, hey, what happened here? And how do we fix these things? Not from a firing the printer type idea, but what's the process issues? Believing that 90-95% of them are process issues, not people issues.
And what are the other regular meetings that you like to run with the team or just participate in with the team? It sounds like the daily production meeting, you have your managers email you a summary of what happened this week or what they did. And then a monthly in-person meeting with them. Am I missing anything?
I have a weekly management meeting. So our huddles, just, you know, those daily meetings, people always say to me, boy, you guys meet every day, but it's 20 minutes. I mean, it's just boom, boom, boom. Where are we at? Break, go, right? It's relative. Grab your coffee. Let's just have a quick chat. So we look through our metrics, where we're at, budgets, all those type of things. So, but once a month, we talk about more strategic issues. And we'll take about an hour and a half to do that. And then I've outlined kind of the follow-up reporting and the monthly meetings. So that's kind of our rhythm. And then if we feel that something's off track, that's kind of the signal issue, right? So, hey, we've got a problem here. Let's really focus and solve these problems. I would say that I was thinking about this. I think everybody's pretty happy here, but they realize that the pace is pretty aggressive, right? So, I value everybody's free time as far as their personal life and so on and so forth. But I had a CEO told me, let's get shit done. I thought that was pretty funny. And that was his slogan over and over and over. It's kind of too much. But the idea is, let's be effective. Let's really focus on the issues and get things done. I think sometimes you can have organizational confusion. You can have a lack of focus. And those are the things to solve.
You said roughly, the goal is 23 million or so for this year, over 110 employees, just doing some basic math, it's 209,000 per employee. Do you look at that metric? Is that where you want it to be? Should it be lower? Should it be higher?
Yeah, so we were running about 48 to 5,200 production revenue per employee. So those are, that's throughout the house, taking procurement out. We're running about 8,000 to 8,500 per employee now. And we've obviously engaged a lot more technology efficiencies. I mean, now we're ingesting orders. We're not doing the manual emails, all that type of stuff. We've, rearranged the tech department because, we were using washers before and things like that. So how to create, I think the biggest problem in this industry is labor. And it's not labor cost. I mean, a lot of people talk about labor costs. I keep referring to that Sunfrog. That was so interesting to me. He said, I engaged technology and was able to pay my employees $2 an hour more. Remember that? And we compete with Amazon now and Tesla and everybody else. So I don't think it needs to be a low paid industry. It has to be a highly efficient workforce.
Interesting. So have you seen more efficiency? You talk about cash flowing more this year now, or finally cash flowing this year. Does that mean that revenue per employee has been able to jump up this year too?
For sure. Yeah, about $1,200.
Got it. I like that you mentioned Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA. I also listened to some of his interviews. Very interesting guy. Runs everyone's heard of NVIDIA, but what's crazy is, he has a very unique management style. I think one of the things I've heard is it's like a flat organization. Everybody, there's no like management hierarchy and everything like that. And he doesn't do one-on-ones. And like, there's a bunch of interesting things, very energetic guy and great to listen to. Were there any other tidbits you think you've pulled from him or others that you've heard? Cause it sounds like you listen to a bunch of other executives.
I think there's a lot of good information out there. Everybody's trying to copy somebody, in my opinion. And I don't think it's good. I think, for example, he has 56 direct reports. That would be a nightmare for me. But the way he runs his meetings, I like, right? But I don't want 56 people in the room. So I think that Kevin O'Leary and Signal with Musk and Jobs is really good points. But I think you want to take an idea of all of the good things out there and then adapt it to your team and your style. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I feel that too. You mentioned a quote, and we can bleep out anything you don't want to say here. I don't think anything private, but your choice. You messaged me and said, there's a lot of creative people that I see getting burnt out on the business side. And they want to be able to focus on working less as an owner. It sounds good, but a goal of working less will not produce the results that I think they're looking for. The process is built on building a healthy company that then reduces your hourly commitment to the company. That takes organizational structure, that takes training, empowerment, developing products and services that add value, and later becoming a coach. And lately I'm seeing fruit with less stress and 100% growth with you guys, which you talked about. And that was done by focusing on building a strong company that needs me less by default. And I was telling my wife, we're getting there and my team handles more and more as I focus more on strategic items. And so it's really fun to be able to see. I was curious as to where you see the burnout happening? And how do you diagnose it? Like, where do you think people are getting burnt out? I'll tell you where I burnt out is that managing too many people, very simply, not having enough of those managers there around that 5 million mark. I would say not being able to step away well enough, being way too involved, you know, day to day, night to night. It was like the weekends were the only time when Slack and messaging and everything stopped. And that was the only time to be able to mentally relax. But what do you see?
Well, I come out of corporate America, so I was thinking about this. I had a feeling you were going to ask about it because I sent you that note. I think I work for private equity. You know, that's a problem in itself, because you, even though I was CEO, I was working for the board of directors and there was a lot of stress. So I really couldn't make my own decisions. So when I took over this company, I thought, all right, now I can make my own decisions. And the reason I sent you the note is people, sometimes I see it on Fabric, they're, you know, how do I get more time to golf or to do these things? And I don't know that's, if you're focused on more free time, how are you going to build your organization, no matter what your goals are? To me, the freedom of not having to report to a board and make my own decisions. If I'm burning out, this is what I tell myself. What are you doing poorly in regards to leading the company? If you're leading properly, you shouldn't feel burnout. It's yours. You're the guy.
That's a great question for all of us. What are you doing poorly as a leader that you could be better at to help your company?
So my job as a leader coach is to empower people and to delegate and to train and to be there for them so they can succeed. If they succeed, then my time goes down. And then I find myself having an afternoon where I can go out and run an errand or so on and so forth. The outcome is free time. The goal, and again, my heart is not trying to be critical, but I see a lot of owners frustrated because of, you know, the same problem you said you run into. I think you work your way through it, not out.
That's a really great, do you think part of that though is the grind of when it's still a small business and you still have to do a ton of different stuff? There's a long grind to be able to get to the path to be able to afford a good production manager, let's say, or a COO type of role.
Yeah. I don't think that's not an issue. I think setting your goals but I think the biggest problem that most owners would tell you, and I don't think I have that. Maybe the reason I'm speaking to you about it is I don't have that weakness because I'm 62 years old, but I realize I can't go do that myself. I've got to let people I always tell them, let's go out and make lots of mistakes and then let's figure out how to fix them. Right. And I'm there for them. And I'm also never, I think I'm never really going to chastise them for making a mistake. Laziness, sure. Lack of detail, sure. But as far as taking risk or learning or growing.
Chris, that's a good clip. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate your time today.
My job is to encourage them to continue.
Obviously, you've had a lot of time working in different types of companies.
And to learn, but if the environment is tense,
things like that,
and if the owner jumps in and solves the problem, you're not making progress. I've got this book called Good to Great that I keep reading over and over. I mean, I think it's a great book. I pretty much try to surf around. I think you've seen. I mean, I like podcasts because they're easier than a book now. And I'm just trying to, look at CEOs and companies that are growing. I even like Bezos. I don't like his company very much. I don't like what he's doing kind of to the industry, but obviously he's very successful. And I think that, listening to successful CEOs that have scaled and grown a company larger, I'm kind of, I think you see, I got a lot of books right behind me. I could mention them all, but I just think YouTube is you can really surf around for different ideas. I think you told, I don't try to take a recipe from somebody else. I try to listen to ideas and build my own plan.
Love it. Dan Frank from Silver Screen Printing out of Nevada. Thank you so much for being able to join us and always share your thoughts. We love it.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. See you soon.
All right, Printhousers. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Have a great week. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.